W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Parts of the Southern Plains are surveying the damage after tornadoes and other powerful winds sweep through, killing at least one person in Oklahoma. Pottawatomie Emergency Management volunteer Shannon Schultz.
What we've seen today is everything from tree damage, fence damage, and we've seen homes that are totally destroyed.
CBS News meteorologist David Parkinson on the storm's path, starting with Oklahoma.
We had at least 8 confirmed tornadoes there. In addition, the storm brought some damage to portions of Texas and Kansas. Then it moved into Illinois, into Indiana and Ohio. That's the last severe leg of this storm. But all of that moisture is going to end up in the Northeast, and it is going to turn into the most snow we have had all winter so far in portions of the Northeast.
In California, the National Weather Service says winter storms will continue moving into the state through Wednesday. Jurors in Alec Murdoch's murder trial will visit the South Carolina home where his wife and son were killed. It comes at the request of the defense, Murdoch's attorney Dick Harpootlian.
The area of the kennels and the house, just to get some understanding of spatial relationships.
The judge has approved the visit. The prosecution did not want the jury to go to the estate. The Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency warns tech companies to tighten up security for consumers. CBS's Nicole Skanga.
CISA Director Jen Easterly called the current threat of cyber intrusions far more dangerous than the Chinese surveillance balloon attracting government and public attention earlier this month. Easterly says China's hacking program is larger than that of every other major nation combined.
Gas prices are on the downswing.
The national average for regular gas is down about 18 cents from a month ago, according to Gas Buddy, now at $3.33 a gallon. Oil industry analyst Tom Closa says it's the opposite of last year.
Last year, we were about to start the craziness. And this year, it's been very sedate for the most part.
But he says prices will increase beginning next month.
But it's going to be a modest increase, not the kind of increase that we saw last year, which was on the order of $1.50 a gallon.
Gas Buddy says Texas has the cheapest gas at $2.87 a gallon. Matt Piper, CBS News.
New Cleveland Clinic research shows that a popular artificial sweetener is associated with an increased risk of heart attack and stroke. Study author Dr. Stanley Hazen.
The very top candidate compound that predicted the future risk for heart attack, stroke, and death turned out to be a compound called erythritol.
Artificial sweeteners such as erythritol are common replacements for table sugar. On Wall Street, the Dow closed up 72 points. NASDAQ also closed up 72 points. S&P 500 closed up 12. This is CBS News.
Staples stores are a new world of possible with innovative tools for small business and remote workers and learners. Explore more at your local Staples store.
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Whoever fired the gun that killed a 12-year-old boy at a teenager's birthday party in West Allis Saturday night is still out there somewhere. Another child was sent to the hospital. There were about 60 people in the room at the time. $10 million is the record for spending on a Wisconsin Supreme Court race. So far, this spring's candidates and outside groups have spent more than $7.3 million. Janet Protasiewicz is getting help from Democrats who say much is at stake.
We really can leave no stone unturned because the stakes for the freedom to control your own body, the freedom to live in a democracy, are so vast.
Ben Wickler is chairman of the Wisconsin Democratic Party. He was on Upfront yesterday. In sports, Mark Lassery has an agreement to sell his share of the Bucks to Cleveland Browns owner Jimmy Haslam for about $3.5 billion. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripes Cast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Pat, I feel like all the women we have on our show, like our co-hosts, always get too famous for us. And they...
I would just like to think that we are fertile ground from which they can blossom. We are the manure from which they spring.
The manure from which they spring. I was going to say holding fort, but I think your metaphor is way better.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
Wait a minute. How about this? Listen to me, you lantern-jawed cretin, you horned-eyed homunculus. You are going to do what's right for the people of Wisconsin. You're putting cans of water in our water, destroying the greatest university system in the country and public education. Knock it off. That is unlikely to be said. That's what I'd say.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
The Shah 101 FM. Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shah 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
And we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to. Lots to talk about. Rupert Murdoch in the news a little bit. Rupert's got a little attention because evidently did a little deposition thing. Where the lawyers tell you, you probably shouldn't lie. Probably shouldn't do what you do on that thing you own on the little idiot box. Maybe you shouldn't make... And this is what I've been saying. When people go into that courtroom, put their hand on that book they say they love so much, swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. So help them, God, or more likely, perjury. They say some interesting things. They do. Rupert acknowledged he misled the public over the election fraud stuff. You know, all of that big lie that they fuming out of them. You know, they were just lathering out of the mouth. His quote was, I would have liked us to be stronger in denouncing it in hindsight. You think you're being sued for a couple $1 billion. You think you might have wanted to, tell your hosts, maybe don't lie. Maybe don't keep pushing a false narrative that everyone knew is true. And look, they still are. There's still people who are doing it. This is the thing that gets me. Now, Rupert confirmed what, I've been saying all along. And in fact, he did it verbatim. This was the part that, my producer, sent me a text going verbatim, word for word, as it would come out of my mouth. He was asked, why do you keep letting Mike Lindell on Fox News? Why do you keep bringing this guy on? And he said, it's not about red or blue. It's about green. And you go, this is what it's all about. It's what it's always been about. And I've told this story numerous times over the years of, going to these talkers conventions where you meet all of these big name right wing talk show hosts. And they don't believe half of what they blather. It's all a matter of what's the sale. How can they monetize every segment of the, and it's not about news, it's not about information, it's not about provoking thought, it's not about none of that. It's about keeping people's ears to the radio and selling them stuff. It's about monetization. And because again, it's not about for them right or wrong, it's not about blue or red, it's about green. And the reality is, and I've said this before, it isn't about the truth. It's about how they can lie to us. And for instance, will you hear on Fox News what happened in Georgia? Will you hear about SB 202 and how
It gave, you know, just any idiot the ability to challenge thousands of people's votes. Let's talk about voter. Let's talk about voter intimidation. Let's talk about fraud. Let's talk about that. Do you hear it? No. In fact, they're reporting that 92,000 people had their votes challenged by just people deciding, I want to challenge someone's vote because there's no repercussions. I can go and challenge every voter in my neighborhood if I lived in Georgia, and there would be no repercussion. I would make them have to go through a whole process of defending themselves, and again, no repercussion. And what they found out is of the 92,000 challenges, there were only a handful that actually worked out to be challengeable. The rest of them were just gumming up the system. The rest of them were just making busy work for county officials and making people defend themselves. And this is the part that's really just amazing to me. And now this group, Fair Fight Action, they're going into federal court to sue, saying that, you know, there was this coordinated effort by these groups to challenge 364,000 people's votes. And look, you know who they were challenging. They were challenging the places that had the highest population. You know where those people are. But, you know, here's the thing. I mean, that's never going to get into the ears of the fake news people. And as I've said before 1,000 times, the reality is they're the Winston Smiths of the 21st century. They're like, you know, up is down, black is white, right is wrong, war is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength. This is 1984 on steroids. Because if you remember, Winston Smith's job, his job was to make yesterday's news fit today's narrative. Now, the reality is none of this stuff, they're going to tell their viewers. It's the reason that Trump loves the poorly educated. And the thing that gets me is there's all of this information that we're now finding out that there was a lot of coordination between our media and these campaigns. For instance, in these court filings, Dominion is claiming that they've got evidence that Rupert Murdoch and them provided Jared Kushner with advanced copies of Biden's ads before they were made public. And you go, well, what's the big deal? It's to me, not, but it just shows that whose side they're on. They're not on the side of fair and balanced. They're on the side of the green, and the right wing pays and pays a lot. And again, this is all stuff we've all always known. Nothing here, nothing to see. Move along, because the people who need to see it, never going to see it. Because why? Well, they're watching the F channel. And look, and even if they do, there's this cognitive dissonance. There's this, no, they're never going to believe it. You know, and as I said, you know, this is the Winston Smith of the 21st century. And if you don't know who Winston Smith was, he was a character in the book 1984. His job was to go back and destroy yesterday's news and rewrite yesterday's news to fit today. That's what his gig was. And this is what the F channel and their minions do. For instance, last week, I joked. This is what I was kidding. Understand, I was kidding. But if you know how the F channel works, if you know how the right wing works, it's all about fear and smear and all about keeping people afraid. I joked that MS-13 was going to be coming back, didn't I? You all heard me. Yep, MS-13 will be back any day now. Well, Fox News ran a story last week, 2 days ago. Behind bars, thousands of criminals, including notorious MS-13 gang members, start filling mega prison in El Salvador. We had to go to El Salvador to get a story about MS-13, but it was back. It was back. And here's the thing. Lauren Boebert, Republican mouthpiece. She tweeted out, this is how you handle criminal gangs like MS-13. Much better to have them end up at our southern border. Because she was, quote, tweeting this story of how these gang members and how these people were treated in the prisons in El Salvador. Now you look at them and they're young men with tattoos and you go, oh, those are all MS-13 members. We should be afraid of all of them. And if you listen to the actual reporting, which you don't do, because heaven forbid you actually understand what propaganda and fear you're throwing at. Even in the report said that, you know, many believe that, you know, a large number of people who are being rounded up, you know, just because they look like this, aren't even criminals. So I threw out this tweet going, you know, this is the fantasy world that conservatives want. They want to be able to just round up whomever they don't agree with, whomever they don't like, throw them into prisons and treat them poorly. Constitution be damned. Now, look, and if all I get is, well, you want criminals to come and, you know, do all this stuff. Wait till they rape your children. And nobody is saying I want criminals on the street. But if you believe in that Constitution thing that you talk about believing in fact, that some still do carry it around as a decoration. You know, like in the old days, they used to wear a flower in their suit coat. Now they've got the Constitution that they never read, but they've got it. It's right there. It looks pretty. It's a nice decoration. If you believe that everyone has the right to due process, everyone has the right to a day in court, all this stuff. So immediately they go, well, that's not how you liberals treated the January 6th political prisoners. I'm going, whoa, what? They're political prisoners? They broke the law. They were charged with actual laws. They've had their day, their initial day in court. They had the charges read to them. They got representation. They've been able to go through the court processes. The fact that it's taking a long time is, hey, welcome to the U.S. justice system, that the wheels of justice grind slowly. And you signed away, in many cases, your right to that quote-unquote speedy trial, which could be who knows how long, again, considering how long these things take. And then going to jail, you know, those jails that you said were supposed to be much tougher, you realize that they're not Club Med. Oh, whiny white people. Yeah, quite amazing. But it comes back to this, you know, being, you know, the stuff that people are force-fed daily over there at the outrage channels, you know, cable news, right-wing talk radio, it's all about the outrage. And, you know, a perfect example of this delusional kind of thinking and reporting, look at the train derailment. Perfect example. You had the anti-regulation, anti-government Republicans, you know, screaming, where's our government? What? You spent decades deregulating and taking the ability to do anything away and yet complaining. Now, here's the thing. The mechanisms worked as they were supposed to. EPA was on the ground within hours. You had NTSB there. All the alphabet organizations were there and responding the way they were supposed to. Government was working exactly as you would expect it, exactly as it's supposed to. Yet you listen to the right wing, they're losing their mind. Because understand what they're doing. They're providing cover for Norfolk Southern. All of this stuff is about putting blame on Buttigieg and on the government. Oh, he didn't respond fast enough. Nope. All the organizations that were supposed to be on the ground were on the ground. Did exactly what they were supposed to do. Now, the fact that the governor dropped the ball a number of times and, you know, didn't ask for help when he should have immediately, that's never brought up. Because, again, that's their team. Now, I admit, I think Biden dropped the ball. Message-wise, the political PR part. But as far as getting people what they need, how they need it and all that, sorry, it's how this works. It's how, for my tenthers, for the people who tell me how much they love the Constitution and that 10th Amendment thing, this is a state's rights issue. The states should be taking this and running with it. And if they need help, they request it. That's how this works. I know it's difficult. But you had Lauren Boebert, who tweeted out today that House Republicans will be launching a probe into Buttigieg's non-response to the train derailment in East Palestine. This utter dereliction of duty cannot be normalized. People are suffering. And I'm going, wait a second. All of a sudden, now Republicans care about these communities? All of a sudden, Republicans now care about individuals? And, oh my gosh, they care about workers? And the F channel, too? Oh my goodness. Can you believe it? And the answer is, here again, it's all about projection. It's all about deflection. You don't hear him talking about Norfolk Southern. You don't hear him talking about the railroad's decisions not to listen to the warning signs. You don't hear him talking about deregulation of the braking systems. You don't hear them talking about slashing the workforce and all of the things that have happened over the last couple of decades because of this regulation fetish that the Republicans seem to have. We need to cut. If you remember during the Trump years, you know, he used to brag he was going to cut 22 regulations for every new one. You don't hear that. You hear the deflection. You hear the, well, it's all government bad. But understand, the government did exactly what it was supposed to do. It operated the way it was intended. Now, again, I go back to, I think Buttigieg and Biden dropped the ball. If it were me, I would have had an army of people lined up at the Pennsylvania border ready to go in. I'd have taken pictures of it. I'd have had, you know, all of the optics, the displays. We would have had patriotic music. There would have been all this stuff because that's, well, evidently that's what we want. We want the show more than the results. At least that's what it appears. Love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So over the weekend, I had, you ever fallen down one of these rabbit holes and you think about something from the past? Like when you were a kid, you remembered somebody, you know, like a baseball player or a football player. And you go, I wonder whatever happened to them. That's the great thing about Google and Wikipedia is, you know, there's every athlete or every person I've ever thought of and going, hey, I wonder what happened to them. There's always something where you go, oh, this is what they're doing or how life turned out for them. And I was reading about the 1980 U.S. hockey team, the Miracle on Ice. And I remember it like it was yesterday because it was in the heart of that period where I was playing hockey. And you know, it was part of my passion at the time. And I remember being able to stay up late and watch the games because, again, time change. They were on late in the evenings, and I remember, you know, I remember those guys, you know, Ruzioni and Craig and Johnson and all those guys. And as I was going through the list, I said, hey, let me take a look and see where some of those guys are. And I came across Mike Wells, who I do remember playing in the Olympics, guy who, you know, drafted by the Canadiens in 1977, played in the NHL for a couple of years in the early 80s. But as I'm reading about, you know his life after hockey, you know, here's a guy who went and was a manager of a restaurant, ended up, you know, blowing out his back moving crates as the manager of a restaurant, you know, unloading a truck, he fractured a vertebrae, and when they did surgery, they found out he had this rare degenerative spinal disease, and it was all downhill from there. And you go, Mike, that's horrible. Here's a guy who, you know, was at the pinnacle of notoriety, a hero, if you will, to some. And I found the part where it said that he had to sell his gold medal because he couldn't get health care. He had to, in order to get the care he needed, he had to sell his freaking gold medal. And the part that really just infuriated me is he sold it for $40,000. And the guy who bought it went and auctioned it off for like over $310,000. I mean, he didn't even get what it was worth because he was desperate and needed the money when he needed it. And it was one of these things where, you know, I read his statement. He said, you know, it killed me to sell the metal, killed me. But my life was crumbling. I was going to lose my home. I needed to sell it to have surgery and to live. I had no choice. And that just, it was one of those things that just stopped me, because this is a guy who was really, I mean, he was a national hero. You know, the receptions, you know, I remember the parades and all the glory that was bestowed. Now think, and I couldn't help then thinking about all of the nobodies, all of the people like me, all of my friends, all of the people who, you know, what if that happened to them? There's no medal to sell. There's no notoriety to try and fundraise off of. There's just pay or die. And again, I come back to this as just in the richest country in the history of civilization, at its wealthiest moment, we should be doing better than this, especially for what we spend on healthcare. And I look at this report just put out by health insurance watchdog Wendell Potter. Interesting numbers he's come out with. He claims that big insurance revenues and profits have increased over the last decade 300% on revenue, 287% on profit. We spent in 2022 $1.25 trillion in the big private insurance world, in the big insurance world. Their profits are almost $70 billion. That's $70 billion that didn't go to CEO pay, executive pay, those cute little commercials and advertising you see all over the place. That's almost $70 billion after all of their expenses that people paid into and, well, didn't get care for. And you look at it and you just go, you know, how's that possible? And you go and you look at that prescription drug bill and the drug prices that we pay in this country. They pointed out that a huge part of this increase has to do with pharmacy benefit management. These pharmacy business management companies and Medicare replacement plans, the Medicare Advantage stuff, they point out that for-profits now control 80% of the national pharmacy benefit management market, 80%, and 70% of the Medicare Advantage market, and it's going to get worse. They also point out that Cigna, one company, now gets more revenue from its pharmacy benefit management than its health plans. CVS gets more revenue from its PBM than from either Aetna's health plans or its nearly 10,000 retail stores. It's all about the drugs, man. It's all about the drugs. And the thing that gets me, and I was thinking about this over the weekend, I knew a guy years ago. They used to be an advertiser with our show in the past, from the big colored cross and shield people. You know who I'm talking about? I'm not going to say the name, but there's a color and they have like a cross there and they're carrying a shield. I'm sure you've maybe you can put that together. Who told me that one of the biggest mistakes that the insurance industry ever made was opposing Medicare. So one of the biggest mistakes, because they were against it, dead set against it. You know, again, this was years before the Affordable Care or the Obamacare on Medicaid expansion, years before that. And he said, look, you know, he understood, you know, private insurers could administer these programs like these Advantage plans. Of course, taking their cuts and having the government as the backstop. It's a perfect scheme, because we, the people, are always the backstop in all of these schemes. And, you know, he said, look, you know, we could have had a public-private partnership where the government mandated everybody's into this and the private corporations would then run it. And, of course, we would squeeze our profit out of it and, you know, do all the things that they do. And he was honest. He goes, look, we deny a lot of claims. And this is a part of the whole profit process. So, you know, that stuck in my head when I'm seeing these numbers going, how much care. You know, they got $70 billion in profit How many people didn't get the surgeries or the health care that they needed? How many Mike Wells out there who have to sell their prized possession just to get the care that they need to live? And I know, you know, Rick, it's a rough world out there. Pay or die. How important is your life to you? I get it. But don't you think we can do better than handing...
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. Snow hits portions of California and storms, some dropping tornadoes, hit Oklahoma and Illinois. One person has died in Cheyenne, Oklahoma. CBS's Omar Villafranca is in hard-hit Norman.
Cars flipped on top of each other. At the same time, the roofs were ripped off these homes. But what the storm did not do was slow down the cleanup effort, as we saw neighbors helping neighbors.
A winter storm warning is in effect for the Northeast. The judge approves a defense request for jurors to visit the property where Alec Murdoch's wife and son were killed. Prosecutor Creighton Waters on why they don't think it's a good idea.
It may confuse the issues again because the property has changed since the night of June 7, 2021.
New Cleveland Clinic research shows that popular artificial sweetener erythritol is associated with an increased risk of heart attack and stroke. Dr. Stanley Hazen.
We saw that it tracked with risk not only amongst people who had existing heart disease, but it also predicted future risk of heart attack, stroke, and death amongst people who had no known heart disease.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Nat Nair. Here's what you need to know. After a quiet weekend of weather across the state, another winter storm is bringing rain, ice, and snow. Central and southeastern Wisconsin could see as much as 1.5 inches of rain over the course of the day, and with much of the ground still frozen, that makes it tougher for rain to seep into the ground or find storm drains. This could cause minor flooding in some areas, as well as water backing up into basements. Lower temperatures across the central part of Wisconsin could cause freezing rain that might impact traffic and cause power outages. The northern counties with the potential to see 2 to 6 inches of snow and some ice during today's storm. A 56-year-old Pewaukee man who died recently while hiking in Grand Canyon National Park was a retired Waukesha County Sheriff's Deputy. Scott McDonald was found unresponsive along a trail on February 17th. He was pronounced dead by National Park Service search and rescue personnel. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
The Civic Media team would like to say congratulations. More than 200 Wisconsin businesses and nonprofits are receiving a free advertising campaign through our one-day $1 million advertising giveaway. If you missed out, our local sales team would still love to help you with your own campaign. Go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. Again, civicmedia.us and sponsorship. New and still growing. Advertise today with a Civic Media network of radio stations.
Cardinal put out these weird, sad videos interviewing incapacitated elders in their nursing homes that don't have the ability to say, don't use me as your political prop.
If they are what you say they are, then you shouldn't be doing it how you did it.
Yes, it was the kids using the parents as props. Well, my old man hasn't talked since 76. Of course he would have voted for Trump. That's the evidence. Videos. People that can't talk.
It is wrong. So it's absolutely wrong.
Check out the entire podcast library at darnwi.com.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Being a father is an honor, a challenge, a duty, a celebration, and a testimony. I want to be legendary for you because I found everything to live for.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
It was made to derail. It pulled 149 cars stretching nearly 2 miles down the track, and it was ill-equipped to detect fires and other problems. This disaster was not an accident. It was mandated by the corporate and government officials now professing outrage.
The-
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So one of my favorite tweets today coming from Marjorie Trainwreck Green. She tweeted out, temperature of America. Americans do not support the war in Ukraine at all and are very turned off with Washington for funding and pushing the war. She said, we want peace. And Americans support a national divorce into red states and blue states with a small, limited federal government. And my first thought was, is she using her head as a rectal thermometer again? I mean, seriously, I know no one who's buying on, no one of any sane, rational capacity to think, thinks that there's a possibility of a national divorce. Crazy, crazy times. Anyway, big day tomorrow in Illinois, the Chicago mayoral race. And here to share some thoughts on the big race, I've asked our good friend Joan Esposito to come talk with us. She's the afternoon radio host over at WCPT AM 820, our progressive affiliate in Chicago. Joan, thanks for taking time for us.
Anytime. Anything for you, Rick.
So let's start with Marjorie Trainwreck. thoughts on the national divorce? Are we in favor? Chicago ready to do off with the rurals and continue this urban-rural thing that's going on?
Well, you know, here in Illinois, downstate, people who live downstate, for years they've said that they would like to secede from Chicago. They would like to cut Chicago and make it, I don't know, its own state or just set it adrift. I'm not sure which. So that's a real familiar argument here.
Yeah, it's not new.
Frankly, here's the thing about Marjorie Taylor Greene and her divorce. If it were as simple, like if we could get all of the crazy people to go to Texas, I'd be more than happy to cut Texas loose or Florida. You know, you pick. I don't care what. But the problem is we've got blue and red in most states. Yep. So it isn't a clean, there's not a clean divide here. So I say we get all of them to move somewhere and then we cut them loose.
But that's their thought. In fact, you know, I had a couple people saying that, you know, and they were very outward and honest about it, that all the black people would move to blue states because they're all lazy, evidently, according to these people. And then it would be perfect. It would be a utopian, you know, white, red-ish kind of scenario.
Well, it does seem like that's what Ron DeSantis is trying to do in Florida. All you gay people, all you black people, we want, the rest of us want you to know you're not welcome here. So you know what? You got relatives somewhere else in the country. Maybe it's time you move over and be closer to your family. I firmly believe that he would love to get rid of the people, what, his deplorables who are black and gay and anybody who opposes him.
Yeah, it's a weird time we live in. But the thing is, nobody's talking about that. The sad reality is, and I guess the reality, not sad reality, the reality is the red areas and the blue areas are dependent on each other for us to be this United States and to have the wealth and the prosperity that we've got. And nobody wants to admit that.
Well, those people in downstate Illinois who hate Chicago, Chicago supports them financially.
Yeah.
They get more money from Chicago than Chicago gets back from the state. So I say, let's try it. Let's try it for a year. Let's just keep all the money in Chicago and we'll see how the downstaters like it after a year and they can weigh in.
See, I got into a little bit of trouble with this. You know, a lot of people were attacking me because I said, you know, the red states are welfare states. Because they, most of them, you know, 8 of the top 10 welfare states in this country are red states. And I said, maybe we should pass a law that says you never can get more than you put into the federal government back. So if you spend a dollar, you get a dollar back. You don't get two, which is what we've been doing in a lot of these southern red states for far too long. It's time to cut the dependence. That, to me, I think would send a little bit different of a message. But the problem is, I know who that's going to hurt. It's going to hurt poor working people. And I guess that's what they really want.
That certainly seems to be what their programs and policies are aimed at doing.
Yeah, it's crazy. I want to get your thoughts on the mayor race, since that's what you're here for. Really close. This normal for Chicago politics to have, you know, what, you got four that are within a couple of points of each other. You got this Vallis guy with 24%, the incumbent mayor with 18, Chuy Garcia with 16, and the county commissioner, Brendan Johnson, with 15. And we'll see who comes out to vote, but it seems fairly close. Is it always this way?
The last polling I saw, actually, Paul Vallis had pulled ahead and he was in the mid 30s.
Oh, wow.
And everybody else was around 18 or 20. That's why the smart money, and I'm not sure it's smart, but the smart money is saying Paul Vallis is in the runoff. Just deal with it. He's in there and he's either going to face Lori, Brandon, or Chewy.
Thoughts on Vallis? Some of the response that I've been getting from listeners, very worried. Worried that he's kind of an Arnie Duncan education guy, that we're going to see
attacks
on public education. Thoughts?
Paul Vallis and Arnie Duncan, Rick, don't invite him to the same party. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Unless you want fisticuffs and fireworks, don't invite them to the same party. They would kill you if you put them both in the same cup, because they see the world so very, very differently.
How so?
I have lots of thoughts on the mayor's race. Before it was the season where everybody was declaring, I used to have Paul Vallis on my show once a week, and we would do 2 hours, and we would sometimes debate things like, when kids should go back to school if with the pandemic, what those parameters should be. We sometimes agreed on things like, why is Chicago taking for freaking ever to get rid of the lead pipes that are bringing water to some of these homes? But it was, when I first started this show, I wanted to not only talk to like-minded people, I wanted to talk to people who saw the world a little bit differently. But what I found was that a lot of the Republicans I would have on would lie to me. They would lie on the air. And then as soon as we would get off the air, they'd be like, oh, well, here's what I really think. And I hate Trump. And I was like, that's not the point. I'm not here so that you can toe the party line on my air. And the thing I like about Vallis, despite what you hear about him being a Republican, he is a Democrat, but he is a conservative Democrat. What does that mean? That means that he's not necessarily a supporter of John Catanzara, the Looney Tune head of the Fraternal Order of Police, but he is a supporter of the rank and file. He may or may not personally sign off on the idea of abortion, but as a politician, he's been endorsed repeatedly over the years by Planned Parenthood. He has never done anything except promote women's rights and women's autonomy. So progressives, oh my God, Rick, here in Chicago, they have their panties in such a wad that Paul Vallis is going to be not Ronald Reagan, because these days Ronald Reagan kind of looks like a Democrat, but that he's going to be like some kind of Ron DeSantis, even though when the Fraternal Order of Police announced that Ron DeSantis was going to come speak to them, within hours, Paul Vallis put out a statement saying that I condemn Ron DeSantis. I think this is a bad thing. I think he is a bad man, and I want nothing to do with it. What else can you ask of a guy?
Yeah.
So is he conservative as far as in the Democratic tent? Yes, he is. But he is. I like him. I like talking to him. I like when we disagree, when we agree. I feel like, he's somebody who not only just wants to tell you what he thinks, but he wants to listen.
Yeah,
he's a smart guy.
Yeah, I want somebody who's going to listen and be movable. I don't want the mayor from Wokistan. Sometimes the loony left goes off the rails. But I do want somebody who's going to stick to the idea that there are things that we should be doing for ourselves: public education, public investments, be a supporter of strong unions, that kind of stuff. That's for me where the heart of the Democratic Party is. And if you're a Democrat, those should be the things I'm worried about. Now, I'm told, and this is the only knock I've heard about him, and I've had a bunch of people reach out to me, the only knock is his stance on education. And it's the reason that I brought him in with Arnie Duncan. Duncan was one of one of the destroyers of public education with all this charter school nonsense. Is Vallis this kind of cut from this kind of cloth?
I've asked him about that point blank. And has he supported charter schools? He absolutely has. But when we used to talk, he's a wonk. he cites numbers. It's like, you know, he's got all these numbers in his head. And when what he will tell you is that when he was Chicago Schools CEO, enrollment increased in the public schools. He negotiated a contract with the teachers union. He seemed to be able to talk to them. He's a big believer in after school programs. He's a big believer in making sure that what he would like to see is, especially in the underserved neighborhoods, job training programs. You know, get high school credit for an internship that you're doing downtown with Goldman Sachs or something like that. So does he support charter schools more than I would be comfortable with? Perhaps. But that doesn't mean that he would cut the legs out from public schools, because that's not what he did when he was the Chicago Public Schools CEO. He boosted them up. He made them better. And enrollment increased. It's the last time we've had an enrollment increase was when he was public schools CEO.
So what's the knock?
Yes, no. I'm giving you a non-answer here, Rick.
Yeah, that's kind of a non-answer. But so what's the knock against him? Because you haven't said anything that I haven't heard from the education people. So what is the what's the knock? And then is there a positive in your view? What's he going to do that you think will make that will be better than Lori Lightfoot? I shouldn't ask that because everything I see out of her has been bad in my view. But you know, I like Chewy Garcia. I don't know Brandon Johnson, but I like Chewy. I would like to see Lori Lightfoot go, but what's the positive in him?
Well, here's the funny thing. You know, I get all these newsletters and every progressive newsletter, and all the progressive newsletters that I've seen, it hasn't been, we don't like Paul Vallis because of X. It's just, oh my God, anybody but Paul Vallis, give us money. We've got to get to the streets. We don't care who it is, but it can't be Paul Vallis. Why? Just tell me why. You know, give me a specific thing about him you don't like. Because you and I have talked about what the basic negatives. Oh, he's a Republican. Well, he's actually not. He hates public schools. Well, he supports charter schools to a degree that I'm not comfortable with. But he also was great and lifted up the public schools when he led them. So give me a good reason. Tell me why you hate Paul Vallis, and then I will consider it. But the other two people you mentioned, I just interviewed Chewy Garcia today. And I think the runoff is going to be Paul Vallis and either Brandon Johnson or Chewy Garcia. I really do. But Chewy hasn't done himself any favors, not because of any policy failing so much as his own personal style. He's laid back to the point of where I think sometimes he gives the impression he doesn't really care. Mm. Oh, you know, we'll talk about that. It'll be great. And one of the people
I heard that before.
Yeah, one of the people I talk to on a regular basis, former Chicago Tribune columnist Eric Zorn, wrote this big thing about how he voted for Chewy Garcia, not because he likes anything about Chewy Garcia. In fact, there was a string. Talk about damning with faint praise. He thinks he's mealy-mouthed and evasive and humbug and dull, but he voted for them for the sole reason that he thinks he's the strongest candidate to beat Paul Vallis. And Brandon Johnson is surging. Brandon Johnson, who's the Cook County Commissioner, who has also, until recently, been in the employ of the Chicago Teachers Union, which kind of disturbs some people a little bit, that he might be a little bit too tied to a union he's going to have to negotiate with as mayor. And the business community is not crazy about Brandon Johnson. I don't know if you've read much, but he's got a whole list of taxes that he wants to impose as mayor. And they almost all go after either tourists, suburbanites, or the business community. He wants to bring back a head tax. And the business community is like, are you kidding me? So we've got lackluster Chewy, controversial Paul, taxing Brandon Johnson, and then don't ever count Lori Lightfoot out.
No.
She's a scrapper. And she is, it's so funny. She is recreating Fun Lori. That was in the beginning, she was Fun Lori, and then she became Angry Lori. And now Fun Lori is back. All these ads where she's dancing and smiling and shaking hands. And I came back from visiting my daughter in January. And for the first time ever As I was waiting for my bags, I hear, "Hi, I'm Mayor Lori Lightfoot, and welcome to Chicago. We're like one of the greatest cities in the whole world." And I'm looking around going, you know, okay, she's been a mayor for 4 years, and now, all of a sudden, now she's ordered a greeting for the people coming in through O'Hare. Subtle, Lori, very subtle.
Interesting. Because, you know, the news that I see coming out is, you know, you got the homeless, you know, I guess, sleeping in the airport and you know, all of these scandals. And it's all about, you know, how she's failed. And I'm going, if you listen to Fox News, and before I let you go, I got to get your thoughts on the Rupert Murdoch deposition. But if you listen to the Fox, you listen to the right wing, Chicago is just a hell pit of fire and misery and homelessness and everything negative. And every time I've been to Chicago, it's been a great place.
This is an editorial. I get the Wall Street Journal at home. Editorial, because, of course, Rupert owns it. Chicago news, nothing but crime. Nothing but crime.
So, yeah, there you go. Nothing but crime. Before I let you go, I got to get your thoughts on Rupert Murdoch saying, you know, the reason that he lets, you know, someone like Mike Lindell continue to lie on air, and the whole reason that they continue with the big lie was it's not about red or blue. It's about green. At least he's honest. I got to give credit where credit is due when you are under deposition and under fear of perjury. They do occasionally tell the truth.
Well, what bothers me about it is not so much that he's admitting that he lied, which I actually think is kind of refreshing, but the fact that you care about that and I care about that. Maybe my listeners and your listeners care about that. But the people who are MAGAs are either not going to be aware of that or they're not going to care. Nothing touches their belief system. Yes, Rupert Murdoch, yes, we lied. We knew we were lying and we thought you were stupid, so we lied to you and we knew you would like it. And they're like, yes, Rupert. Thank you, Rupert. Where can I sign up for a new subscription?
Exactly. I mean, that's, you know, lie to me more.
Lie to me more, please, Rupert.
They love the poorly educated.
So, yeah, is it outrageous? Is it, should it be front page headlines for the next 2 weeks? But you know it won't be, Rick. You won't. You know it won't be. Is it going to be a one-day story? Maybe it'll be a two-day story. But it wouldn't be unheard of for it to be a one-day story because the MAGAs don't care. And the rest of it are, we know we're like abused children. We just take it.
That's the sad reality in this. But for me, the hope is that the 5 or 10% of the population that makes the decisions in this country, you know, the least informed, least active, least engaged, least educated, that maybe they'll pay attention, and maybe those votes that 5 to 10% in that are disconnected, that they'll go, oh, hey, yeah, they were lying to us, and maybe they'll care. I don't think so, but maybe.
Yeah, you. That's good. Cup half full guy, Rick. That's good.
I've never been accused of that.
Cup half full guy. We like that.
You're the only person who's ever accused me of that. So, before I let you go, prediction for tomorrow, who are going to be the runoff people?
Well, here's what I think is going to happen, and oh, this is going to be fun. It's possible that he's so far ahead that we will definitely know that Paul Vallis has the numbers to get into the runoff. But as you said, Lori, Brandon, and Chewy are running a very tight campaign. The Board of Elections has told us that there are so many mail-in ballots coming in, we might not know who Paul Vallis is running against until March 14th, which means Chewy and Brandon and Lori, if that happens, they have to keep campaigning. They don't even know if they're on the ballot, and they have to keep campaigning. You can't sit back for 2 weeks and then step in.
You know what's great about that? Comcast gets to make more money.
And so does CBT. Yay!
There you go. Joan, as always, great stuff. I look forward to having you back again. Always fun.
Anytime.
Thanks so much, our good friend Joan Esposito, afternoon host over at WCPT AM 820, our radio affiliate on Chicago's Progressive Talk Station. Want to hear your thoughts right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1942. That was the day that 27 Japanese women working in the Seattle public school system handed in their forced resignations. In the aftermath of the attacks on Pearl Harbor, anti-Japanese hysteria swept the United States, especially the West Coast. 127,000 people of Japanese ancestry were sent to live in 10 internment camps by executive order of President Roosevelt. Many of these U.S. citizens sold their homes and businesses, often for a fraction of their value, before they were forced to move. In Seattle, mothers from Gatewood Elementary School circulated a petition for the removal of Japanese office employees from the schools. The school district pressured the women to resign. Even James Sakamoto, the editor of the Japanese American Courier, encouraged the women to voluntarily leave their jobs. He met with the women at the newspaper's office and told them they should resign before they were fired. Faced with such pressure, the women wrote a resignation letter. They wrote, "Most of us have received our education in local schools and have been proud of the fact, as we have been proud of our positions as employees." Word of the resignations quickly became headline news in local newspapers. Several protests were held in support of the women. Students at the University of Washington circulated a petition on their behalf. They gathered more than 1,000 signatures, declaring the treatment of these office workers undemocratic, intolerant, disrespectful of the rights of American citizens. In 1986, the governor of Washington signed into law an admission of wrongdoing toward these women and payment of reparations for their forced resignations. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Tennessee Republican Representative Andy Ugles. Yeah, that's his name. He claims that he's a trained economist. That's right. Trained economist. Now, look, you know, there are a lot of people who, you know, pull things out of the dark side, you know, out of that orifice back there. That you go, oh, where'd you pull that out of? Well, we know. Turns out, I don't know what it is about Republicans and lying about their resume. I get padding the resume. I've been known to you know, maybe exaggerate a touch, but there's always that, hey, you've got to defend what it is you're claiming. You've got to have at least some, you know, some touch of reality. Evidently, him being a trained economist means. He took one community college course and got a C. That evidently in his world is. Now, I don't know how you justify that. Like I said, I've taken two economy courses in college years ago, and you know this was you know back when they were still fighting over Keynesianism and the you know the new neoliberal kind of give rich people everything they want, slash government down to nothing. So there was that kind of push-pull even at the time. This was the late 80s. And I find it interesting that you have, you know, Mr. Ugles, the trained economist. See, you got to see. That he's going to be one of the guys working on the Republican budget ideas. And the reports that are coming out is when they return, which is here very soon, Republicans of the House will return, they're planning on cutting $150 billion in what they call woke spending. Yeah, you know like education. You know, we're gonna spend money on education. We're spend money on cutting. They're gonna cut SNAP benefits. In fact, we're coming to a benefit cliff here very soon. Where you know here in this state, I think they said you know 2 million people in the state of Pennsylvania are going to have their food stamps cut, or cut out completely, or cut drastically. Yeah, so, you know, make people go find, you know, on who are getting SNAP benefits, you know, prove that they're working. They're going to go after people, you know, who are getting the earned income tax credit. We're going to go after that. They're going to cap the Obamacare at a lower level. They're going to cut EPA. No more spending for green vehicles. No legal assistance for those illegals. You know, things that are going to hurt people. Also stopping woke waste projects that...
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.